So we have with us right now a legendary actor. He is Tuck Watkins. You all know him. Of course you do. From series like One Life to Live and Desperate Housewives, where he played Bob Hunter, a resident of Wisteria Lane. You remember? I remember. But right now he's in a movie, which I have seen, and it's a really good movie, actually. It's called Retake. And we're going to talk a little bit about that and some of the previous things he's done. So let's say hello to Tuck Watkins. How are you? Welcome to the program.
Hi, Mark. I'm happy to talk to you.
It's nice to have you here. And let me ask you a bunch of different questions here first before we get into this. So this is really interesting stuff, the fact that all the different things you've done. But one of my favorite shows when I was younger, a little younger, not too young, but was Melrose Place. And I understand you were actually on that show. I'm trying to remember the episode because I remember most of those shows.
Yeah, that goes way back, huh? I did an episode where I played Billy's friend, played by Andrew Hsu,
right.
And he set me up with Courtney Thorne Smith, and I was sort of just a personified cardigan sweater. I was this guy in a cardigan sweater,
mm-hmm.
And when Courtney Thorne Smith and I started getting along, Billy got jealous and pulled the plug and said, "I think I left the stove on, we have to leave." So it was a pretty lame exit line, but it worked.
Yeah. Now, it's funny because I mentioned on my Facebook page that you were coming in today, and I was interviewing you. And it's interesting, the people, what they wrote. Now, someone named Gene wrote, ask him about when he was on Get a Life, because he was great as a preppy guy named Sapphire. I'm like, what is she talking about?
Well, Get a Life was a really funny sitcom that Chris Elliott created and starred in, where he was sort of a bum who lived in his parents' basement, and he wanted to go to modeling school. So he went to the Handsome Boy Modeling School that was run by Brian Doyle Murray, and I was his arch enemy at the Handsome Boy Modeling School, and I named myself Sapphire. And so in response to that, he named himself Sparkles.
And Gene tells me that there are clips from that on YouTube now, if anybody wants to watch that. So
yeah, that goes back to the early 90s, but that's what YouTube's good for.
Yeah, I guess so. So you've actually done a lot of shows, but people mostly know you from the soap opera and also from being on Desperate Housewives. I was a Desperate Housewife fan. I'll confess it. I watched every single episode. I loved the show, and my friends used to make fun of me for it, but I didn't care. And tell us about what it was like to be on the show with mostly female cast. Well, at least the big stars were.
Yeah, that was a fun show to work on. It's always nice to work on a juggernaut from time to time. In season four, Mark Cherry, the creator, wanted to bring on a gay couple, and so he hired Kevin Rahm and myself to play Bob and Lee, and we lived in the house between Terry Hatcher and Eva Longoria. And Kevin was the funny one, and I was the tall one.
And I remember that you guys were, it was pretty funny stuff. But there was also some serious moments, too.
That show is, you know, a little bit of comedy, it's a little bit of drama, it's a little bit of suspense. And we erected a horrible fountain in our front yard. That was sort of a lightning rod for the neighborhood. we hosted a wild Halloween party, and each year someone would get killed. And so all the cast members would whisper about, who's going to get killed this year? I hope it's not me. I hope it's not you. And one year there was a Santa Claus house at the end of the lane that a small plane crashed into, and we knew someone was going to die, but we didn't know who. Because it was a cliffhanger, yeah. And luckily, Lee and I survived.
But in reality, it must be difficult because you don't know if you're going to have a paycheck coming the next year.
Well, that's sort of the life of an actor. There's thick years and thin years, and you know we go from job to job, and sometimes they're long running jobs. Like we were on Desperate Housewives for 4 or 5 seasons. And One Life to Live was terrific because it ran for 44 years. And I was on and off of that show for, I don't know, maybe 15 years.
Yeah.
And that was another really fun show to work on.
Yeah. But you've done everything from, like, some of the heavy shows like NYPD Blue and CSI Crime Scene Investigation to some of the comedy stuff, too. So you've been all over the place.
Yeah, you know, in television, you're sometimes you're just a hired gun, literally, on NYPD Blue. Or, you know, we like to do a bunch of different stuff. So it's great to work in hour-long dramas and half-hour sitcoms and feature films and theater. And, you know, when you're studying acting in acting school, you just kind of want to do all of it. So I've been fortunate that I've gotten to do a little bit from column A, a little bit from column B.
Yeah. Now, you're a Kansas City guy. That's where you were born. But I thought that was really interesting that your early career, you were the stud. You were always, you know, like being fixed up with Courtney Thorne Smith and things like that. So what must have been difficult in 2013 when you came out as gay with Marie Osmond on her show?
Well, it wasn't really difficult. You know, actors like to play a bunch of different parts. So I played a lot of straight characters. I played a lot of gay characters. You know, I'm gay in real life. But, you know, gay actors don't just play gay parts. We play serial killers, and we play leading men, and we play characters. Sometimes we play monsters and vampires and things like that. That's why we get into it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it doesn't matter who's gay or who's straight. And in fact, on the screen, it doesn't translate. It's you're whoever you are as an actor. So
yeah,
it's really not relevant. But I thought it was really interesting because in 2012, in December, you had twins, Ketch and Curtis, with a surrogate named Melissa. I thought that was kind of interesting. That was pretty much maybe a little ahead of its time. I don't know.
Well, you know, I always knew I was going to be a dad. I didn't know how I was going to be a dad. And when I was in my mid-40s, I was tired of being the most important person in my own life. And something in my instinct said, now's the time. And I set off down the road to become a dad. And I had looked into fostering, to adoption. And when I learned about surrogacy, I thought surrogacy was really the right choice for me. I thought if I can have my own kids, I would like to do that. And so I met with a surrogacy agency, and they connected me with this lovely woman and her husband and their three kids. You know, I sort of thought when I got into it, I would just be working with an individual, but it was really a family that I met. And so I had twins, a boy and a girl, in December of 2012. So they're 4 years old now. And we're still friends with Melissa and her family. We see them annually. And so now I'm a single parent of twin four-year-olds, and I've been exhausted for 4 years.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. So do you have anybody helping out when you're doing a film or something? Or?
Yeah, it's sort of a patchwork quilt. I recently relocated back to Kansas City, where all of my family is, because I just want my kids to be around family. I want them to have the kind of upbringing that I did. I want them to catch fireflies and jump in a lake and, you know, run from yard to yard. Los Angeles is a great place to live when you're working. I just thought, you know what, I would really like to be around my family. So when work calls, you know, I go do work where it's necessary. I haven't had to do anything that's long-term yet. So my family has filled in, and I've got some close friends that also help out a lot. So while I say I'm a single parent, I do have a lot of support around me, which
yeah,
I'm very grateful for.
Well, it's really kind of cool when you can combine both, because it's the best of both. And as someone who's been in this business for a long time, I can just say that the kids and the family, they're something that will always be there, you know?
Yeah.
So that's a great thing. Now, we're talking to Tuck Watson about a film. It's called Retake. And let me tell you what the Hollywood Reporter said about it. They said it's carving out some distinct new territory in the world of queer cinema. It's from Breaking Glass Pictures, and Nick Corcoran is the filmmaker. It's really a very interesting film. It's an LGBT drama about two broken souls on a road trip to Grand Canyon, but it's much more than that. It's a movie about love, loss, power. It's a fascinating film psychologically.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that. You know, I think of it as a suspenseful love story, and that's sort of a unique genre. I would say, you know, I was really drawn to this film because while it's got universal themes of, you know, love and loss and grief, it's specifically told through the lens of a gay man's perspective, and it's about this guy who is stuck in middle age, and he tries to recreate a road trip with, and he sort of he casts a male hustler that he hires to play the part of a previous boyfriend to try to come to some closure on what happened in that relationship. And while I say it's, you know, universal about love, loss, and grief, but it's told through a gay man's perspective, I believe that gay people of my generation, I'm 50 now, or at least for myself, we mature differently than our straight counterparts, sometimes a little stunted. I think a lot of gay people, you know, don't enter their first real relationship until they come out, and that's often not until they're in their 20s or 30s. And so we make the mistakes that our straight counterparts made when they were teenagers. And so this guy, you know, I think, you know, came out a little bit later in life and didn't start getting to know who he was emotionally until he was older. And so I think that's a unique perspective that Nick put on this movie that we haven't seen a lot of.
So based on what you're saying now, I'm just going to ask you a personal question then. When did you realize that you were gay, and did you go through dating women and stuff and saying, well, this didn't feel right, or how was it for you?
Well, I came out when I was 23. I think I knew I was gay in high school or college, but, you know, certainly questioned it, and I dated women, and I didn't really have a lot of role models to look to, either personally or in, you know, in TV and film. And so, you know, I went through a lot of questioning. I went through a lot of doubting and wondering, and it wasn't until I moved to California after I graduated from college and I met some people that I felt like I could identify with, that I was comfortable, you know, identifying as a gay person.
And how did your parents react?
You know, I thought there would be some resistance and some concern, but it was kind of like an after-school special. They I think they were surprised at first, but they, you know, they were visiting me in Los Angeles, and when they went home after I had told them, they went directly to the library and they got books about homosexuality, and they actually went and talked to a counselor. And then we all got together, including my sister, the four of us. We went and talked to a counselor about, you know, Tuck is gay and what does that mean. And they've been nothing but supportive and wonderful since I told them a long, long time ago. So I've been very lucky. I've been very lucky that way, because I know a lot of people don't have that story and they don't have support from their family. Yeah. So I'm very grateful for that.
It's a good thing. This movie was beautifully acted, and there's one thing that runs through the whole thing, and it's the character of Brandon, who's never really... Brandon, for folks who haven't seen the film, was the young man that Jonathan, who Tuck plays, went to San Francisco with years before, and there was a tragedy, and he lost Brandon. So it seems to me like that... he's really a part of this thing. He haunts the film during the whole duration of the film.
Yeah, he's certainly a character in the film, even though he's only seen in flashback briefly. But his presence is, I think, certainly felt by the audience, and his presence has never left Jonathan, and that's why he's stuck, and that's why he is going to the sort of crazy length of hiring someone to play him so that he can try to get through whatever this was and get to the other side so that he can move on and, you know, progress and grow and, you know, continue living his life because he's just stalled.
Jonathan has this, his character has this hustle that that's played by Devin Gray. He actually has him putting on the cologne that the other kid had and some of the clothes, and he takes him and takes pictures of him in front of the same things. It's an incredibly deep movie and emotionally wrenching.
Well, yeah, God is in the specifics, and so, yeah, he makes him put on a wig that makes him look like Brandon and his clothing and his cologne, as you say, and they go to all the same stops. And my take on it was that I think Jonathan thinks if he can replicate every step of the way up to the point where things went bad and then move through that point where things got bad, maybe he can, you know, derail the misery he's feeling and start over.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to tell people what happens at the end because it's a really interesting film. And how long did it take to do?
You know, we shot that movie in 16 days.
Wow.
You work with what you've got, and it was a low budget, but it was a fantastic script, and that's why I think Devin and I signed on to do it. And we rehearsed it for a few days prior to shooting it, so we would know what we were going to do, when we were going to do it, because we had to do several pages a day. You know, most movies, you know, do a couple pages a day, maybe, but we were doing 8, 10. I'm not sure how many. So it was very taxing, but it felt like working on a play. It felt like it was a very intimate project. It's called, there's really two characters in the movie with some ancillary characters well. But when you do a two-hander like that, it's really nice to work with, you know, a small crew and everyone, you know, is sort of all in the same boat together.
What type of work is it to try to memorize that script, or was there aids that to help you fill in lines, or did you have to actually memorize that whole thing? That's a lot of memorization.
Well, you know, in a movie, in TV, there's a lot less memorizing. The memorization isn't quite so difficult because movies and TV are stories told with pictures, and you know, like theater is more dialogue driven. Memorizing lines in a play. I'm doing a play right now called Constellations by Nick Payne at Kansas City Repertory Theater, and it's a very difficult script. It's very dialogue heavy script. Movies, when you're shooting a scene, you know, it takes a few hours to shoot a scene, so you shoot it from a bunch of different angles. So the memorization in film, it's not really that bad. Soap operas, now that was hard. You had to do 80 pages a day. And you're sort of saying what you said yesterday, and you're going to sort of say what you say today again tomorrow, so it can get a little confusing.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, no, you're right, because you're not doing all these lines in a continuous loop there. You're doing a few at a time as each take goes, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So this is the movie is called Retake. Where can folks see that, or is it available right now on video?
Well, it has a theatrical release in Los Angeles right now. So if you're in Los Angeles at the Lemley Royal Theater in West Los Angeles, and it's also available on iTunes and Amazon and several other video on demand platforms.
It's called Retake.
I think if you Google it, you can find it pretty easily.
Yeah, you can Google Retake the movie, and that comes up because I did that. Anything else that, you said you're doing the play, which is great because you're home to be able to do that, which is nice, huh?
Yeah, that's really nice. And there's a TV series called Eastsiders on Netflix, and I've worked on the end of that season 3. That comes out sometime this year, but I'm not sure when, but it's called Eastsiders on Netflix.
And what do you play on that?
Wilson Cruz and I play a gay couple who run into Kit Williamson and Van Hansen, who play the main characters in that show, and we sort of hold up a mirror to them as to be careful as you age. Do you want to become a couple like us, or do you not want to become a couple like us?
That sounds interesting. All right, well, I want to thank you, Tuck, for coming on the show, and I want to wish you lots of luck with everything you do, and especially with the kids.
Okay, thanks so much, Mark.
Take care.
Nice talking to you.
You too.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.